My dad would insist today that we not mourn his passing, but we celebrate his 91 years of living with warm remembrance and laughter, especially laughter. Although his last days were consumed by the act of dying, it was how he lived that made him so special. Now, there may be some of you present here today who were never startled, shocked, or even offended by something my dad said or did. If so, you probably didn't know him very well. He was not bashful or shy about offering his opinions, asked for or not, and he didn't lack for certainty about being right, and laughter was a customary element of any conversation. My dad's family of origin and the Chicago of his childhood explained so much about him. The only son of immigrant parents, Julius and Goldie, he was adored and revered by his mother and father. His mom and dad surely thought that Copernicus was wrong. The sun was not at the center of the universe, their son was. And it's fair to say that my dad found their point of view justified. When his mom and dad didn't have the money to buy him a wristwatch as his bar mitzvah, they pawned their wedding bands to raise money for funeral. There was never any doubt about his parents' love for him, nothing conditional. My Aunt Kay, his only sibling, with good grace, somehow put up with him, and Dad dearly loved her and her husband, my Uncle Ralph, and he took great pride in his nephews, Gary and Bob, and their family. When I was a child, my dad described the Chicago neighborhood he grew up, and I was convinced he had grown up on another planet, Mars perhaps. He described his neighborhood as a desolate landscape, filled with mud, rocks, ice, and devoid of any plant life, save a single tree, long dead, with a single leaf, withered and lifeless. That surely explained his abiding drive to plant and grow. At our house in Reseda, where I grew up, purchased post-World War II under the GI Bill for $11,000, we had a small lot. But my dad managed to plant a lawn, an orange tree, a lime tree, a lemon tree, a maple tree, pyracanthus, geranium, roses, and that was just in the front yard. Back then, as in later years, if my dad hadn't been working in the yard, he never had a problem finding it. All you had to do was follow that unbroken trail of muddy footprints from the yard into the house, through the house, into the room in which he had gone. As much as he enjoyed planting and growing shrubbery and trees, he loved chopping them down and trimming them. When Robert and I were young children, my dad gave us haircuts with electric clippers. If you ever saw a bush or tree he had trimmed, perfectly asymmetrical and uneven, you understand why in our childhood photos, Robert and I look somewhat misshapen. Although my dad's family's financial situation was modest, money did not come into the room, as it does for many who grow up on the edge of poverty. He always made clear that anyone who just chased a buck was not to be admired. After all, he and my mom spent three years in New York, living in Greenwich Village in a basement apartment while my mom pursued a career in the theater and my dad as a writer. It was years later, after his retirement, that he wrote his book on grammar, The Bite and Bits of Language. I believe I may have indirectly inspired the book after I gave him some of my college papers. Fortunately, my dad did so much of his writing the old-fashioned way, in longhand. Some of us who did not grow up with computers developed a love-hate relationship with computers. My dad, he developed a hate relationship with computers. First, with his Mac, which he said was a four-letter word, and later with his PC, which he dubbed the Dell from Hell. In recent years, I would pick Dad up to go to lunch, and I would bring him back to the house or go to Weiler's Deli. We marveled at the size of the portions and the outsized personalities of the waitresses. But as soon as he got into the car, he would insist that I drive him east a few miles back to Reseda and to our former house, the place, he said, of his greatest happiness. The house looks completely different now. It's completely changed, except for the number out front, 19543 Schoolcraft Street. But he was so happy at being back in that neighborhood. I am sure he had returned in his mind's eye back to that joyous time when he was a father with young children. It's hard to describe, even back then, my dad's passion for building fires in the fireplace, although the term pyromaniac does come to mind. I'm sure this passion was a product of a lifetime spent trying to defrost from frigid Chicago winters, he remembers. And it certainly made sense when he built a fire on a chilly December day, but I'm pretty sure he was the only one here in the San Fernando Valley in the middle of August when he had a fire. Dad didn't finish college until late. He was 30 years old. And by the time he finished college, he had also served in the Army Air Corps during the war, where he taught pilots how to fly, which at first glance seemed so odd since he wasn't a pilot and he didn't know how to fly a plane. But he taught them how to fly using just instruments and not looking where they were going, which, if you have ever ridden as a passenger, you know there was no one better qualified. He was stationed in Mississippi when he taught, and that may have been the first place he fell in love with teaching, because I know from what he described for me, he didn't fall in love with Mississippi. When I began teaching 10 years ago, I worked from a foundation he had built. He constantly would tell me how easy it was to teach the motivated and the gifted, but the real challenge was to reach every student. The keys were to insist upon understanding, inspire wonder, and to care about your students. If they knew you cared, they would learn. When my dad spoke of his youth, I always felt he exaggerated a bit because he described a kind of indentured servitude where he was working multiple jobs 24/7. I say that because as a youngster, I went back to Chicago with my mother, and I met so many of his relatives and people who knew him. Everyone remarked about how much they enjoyed playing tennis with him and how good his game was. His love of tennis explains why often said among his happiest days were those spent at Oakwood Apartments, where he was just an elevator ride away from three tennis courts. Some time back, my dad and I didn't speak for a while, and so I joined a distinguished and fairly lengthy list of his family members and friends with whom he, for some period, cut off communication. Hey, in our family, you were nobody, and my dad didn't speak to you. But we agreed that what had come between us was petty and insignificant. Blood is thicker than wine, Dad said. We picked up where we left off. After we lost Lynn's mom, in tribute, my dad said that every grandchild should have a Grandma Connie. Well, every grandchild should have a Grandpa Max. Grandchildren did. Their lives were intertwined with his. It was just this last Father's Day at our house where among the guests were Robert, Suzette, and Jake, who at 5 years of age and already hanging from a tree with a single arm and throw a baseball left or right-handed, Darren, Julia, Andrew, Lynn, his fellow mother, Grandpa Danny, and he called Deason, Dick, and Oregon, and he heard about granddaughter Lynn. He was beaming, surrounded by family. As a sibling from my brother and sister, I have suffered the usual slings and arrows and even BB gun attacks. Nevertheless, I'm immeasurably proud of who Lisa and Robert have become and of their families. My dad's children and their families are both a tribute and a testament. As father and son, we left nothing unsaid, no unfinished business. Admittedly, our discussions about faith never got very far. After all, my dad subscribed to Skeptic magazine, so I can't say in his final days that he was looking for God. uncertain that God found him.